Well, have you ever heard of pareidolia? That's right. That is the phenomenon of seeing faces in clouds. How about that? We're going to come back in a moment. We'll take your stories. How have oracles changed your life? That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Ann Bollinger McWade as we talk about oracles. You have told people, by the way, not to discount just about any kind of message. And why don't you explain that?
Well, I think sometimes we think things are too far-fetched or too crazy, you know, too wild. And I'd like to give a couple of examples. One of them, and again, this will also show you how we see things that relate to us personally. There is a midwife who always loved to see banners in the sky being pulled behind airplanes. When she was little, she saw a banner being pulled by an airplane, and it said happy birthday, and she thought that was just the coolest thing that could ever happen to anybody. Years later, the midwife is going to help deliver a baby, and she looks up in the sky, and she sees a banner in the sky. Now, this is not a real airplane. She is seeing a banner in the sky, and it said hemorrhage. And when she got to the place where she was going to help the baby be delivered, the woman hemorrhaged. And she said she was prepared because she just knew going in that there was going to be a hemorrhage. Now, that sounds really out there, doesn't it? There was another one, Kelly Savalas, who was Kojak. Anybody that remembers him? He used to go around talking about this thing that happened to him where he ran out of gas, and somebody came up to him, and they were in a white Cadillac, and the man said, let me help take you to get some gas. And he took him to get gas, loaned him the money, wrote down his name and phone number, and said, you know, you can pay me back because Kelly Savalas didn't have any money on him. He called the next day, and he got the man's wife and described the man, described what he had on, described the car. And the woman said, well, that sounds like my husband, but he's been dead for a few years.
I got that same kind of story, and years ago on my talk show, when a person had called me, listen to this one, he was despondent, suicidal.
Wow.
And he was actually looking for a peaceful place to kill himself.
Oh.
And so he went driving away about 100 miles from his city, and he found a little lake, and he figured, that's where I'm going to do it. And so he was out there sitting on this park bench by this lake looking at ducks pop in and out of the little lake. And, you know, moments before he was going to do what he was going to do, an old farmer came by and sat down next to him. Typical, coveralls and all that.
Yeah.
And they just started talking, and he just said, after an hour, I felt so good about life that I was excited. I went back to my town. I got a new job. I got a new relationship. He said, I'm on top of the mountain now. And he said it was all because of the influence of this guy. So he said about a year later, I wanted to go back to that little town that I was thinking of killing myself in. And
yeah.
I wanted to thank that little farmer again, because a whole year had gone by and he would have been excited over what had happened to me. And so he didn't get his full name. He didn't know where to go. He figures it's a little town of a couple thousand people. There's one barber shop there. And so he'll go into the barber shop, and the barber says, hey, just, you know, he's asking him questions. The barber said, yeah, just go to the White House up there by the hill. And so he did, and he knocked on the door, and the daughter of the guy apparently came to the door. And he said, excuse me, because she's much too young to be his wife. And he said, I want to thank your father. About a year ago, he did something for me that changed my life, and I just want to thank him. And I'm sorry to disturb you, but is he home? Can I talk to him? And she stopped him, and she said, you know what? You're the fifth person to come and do this. Dad died 15 years ago.
Wow.
I mean, those things are chilling stories, aren't they?
They're chilling, and or they're really exciting to me, because I think what they show, the way I interpret that is, we limit ourselves so much by what we think is reality.
Yes.
That quote-unquote reality is so much cooler than we realize.
We're going to go to the phones for you now. Kelly is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, George.
Welcome.
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure thing.
I have a really, really awesome story here. My sister, she was about 16 years old, so this was probably 20 years ago, or 18 years ago. Her and a girlfriend were volunteering at a zoo all day together into the evening, and then they had about a total of 10 kids at her friend's house, and they were all getting ready to leave to go bowling, two cars of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's good friend was stood up on a date, and she showed up at the house, and she said, you know, will you please just, you know, let's go to a coffee shop and have some coffee, smoke some cigarettes, and just listen to my story. And my sister, being a good friend, she said, sure. And she went with Rachel instead of with the two groups of friends. Now, they got to the coffee shop. They're sitting there having their coffee, and they hear sirens and all this stuff. And And her two carloads of friends hydroplaned on the highway. This was like a week before Christmas. It was just raining, and they hydroplaned, and they collided into each other. And the one car that my sister would have been in went over the highway and crashed, and three out of the five kids in there died.
Oh.
And before we even knew any of this, I was working. When I drove home that night, I saw just fire trucks and ambulances, police everywhere, and I just prayed to God, because I was very protective of my sister, that it was, my sister was okay. When I got home, I saw that she was sleeping, and about an hour after I got home, I woke up to just a scream, and it was my sister. And I said, what's the matter, you know? And she's like, I just had this terrible dream that I was in a car accident, and I was alive, but I couldn't talk, and I couldn't move, and I was just trapped. And, you know, she went back to bed, and everything was fine. And then, like, 2 hours later, I woke up to more screams, and that was my whole family. And that's when we got the phone call that her friends that she was with were all killed in that car accident.
She felt it.
She just was, that was supposed to be me. That was supposed to be me. And she just had that dream 2 hours earlier. It was just so crazy how everything fell into place.
That's,
you know,
great...
And I thank Rachel all the time. Every time I see her, I'm just like, you know, she saved my sister's life for asking her to go have coffee.
Absolutely. Now, is that an oracle, Ann, or is that just good luck? Or what is that?
Well, you know, what I do is I define a personal oracle as a need. So the need was for, let's see if we can fit it into this formula. So what engages the universe is a need. Well, your sister looked like she was headed for one of those invisible moving sidewalk things. So there was a need to protect her. So the delivery system in this formula would have been the woman who invited her to go with her and do something else. So to me, when I look at personal oracles through this formula, the need, the delivery system, the message, that was definitely a personal oracle to me that saved your sister's life.
Sounds like it. Linda's next, Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great. I just wanted to let you guys know that I believe in all the things that you're saying. I had an image that appeared in my floor, and it was a triangle. But when you enlarged it, it was a picture of Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
So this is nothing really new. I've had strange things happen all the time. It's just that this kind of blew me away.
Now, those messages, when you see things that are religious, and it does happen, what does that mean?
Well, and I think that's, what did that mean to you? How did it make you feel? That's what's important to me. So when you saw that image, what was going on with you?
Well, I had made some transitions in my life, and I just felt God was saying that he's with me.
There you go.
Well, maybe that's what it means. Hey, Linda, thanks for that. Now, you know, when you look at this, What do we have any particulars of our senses? Does one pick it up more than the other?
I think it totally depends on the person. I think that, you know, some people are visual, some people, you know, they're audio. Well, I've got some people that are tune in through the smell. I've got a few stories in there about, do we have time for a story about the smell, or we want to go to some more people?
No, go ahead. We've got people all hour. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, this is one that I dearly love, and it started out with a woman who had recently been divorced, and she was noticing this smell in her house, and it was this cigar smell, kind of a sweet, smoky, I shouldn't say cigar, smoky smell, and she noticed it. And then she would notice after a while, when she was out shopping, she might notice it. So it was kind of random. First she thought maybe it was her fireplace. Well, then she finds, this is Cindy, then she and Wally get together, and they're in a relationship, and Wally moves into the house, and she goes, have you noticed that smell? And he says, well, yes, actually, I have. And separately, they had realized on their own what it meant to them. She had come to think that it was her father making his presence felt when she needed him around. Well, he said, well, I always thought it was my father, you know, supporting him. His wife had died recently. So they get to talking to her mother and her sister, who also had smelled this smell, and went, well, yeah, that makes sense that it would be the dad. Well, Wally's son didn't know anything about this. It just hadn't spread that far into the family. And his son moved to another town, and Wally went to see his son. And the son said, Dad, have you noticed how this whole town smells like barbecue?
Jeez. Next up, we go to Mary in Ohio. Mary, go ahead. Take it away.
Oh, hi, George. Thank you very much for taking my call. Long-time listener, big fan.
Thank you.
And I have many stories to share. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous. Many stories, but I'll share one of my favorites. Deeply religious, very Catholic, and I had my aunt visiting from out of town, Virginia, and she's staying at my home. She was in the convent to be a nun. I was very busy the next day, Sunday, and I planned on missing church, but I dare not miss church when my aunt is in town. And we stayed up till 2 in the morning. She says, what mass are you going to? I said 11:30, and I made it. But I was very busy. My son had to be at football at 12:30, and my other son was having surgery the following Monday. So the whole time I'm in church, I'm praying for both of my kids very, very fervently. And little did I know, it was the anniversary of my parish, and there was a bishop there, and everything takes longer. I've got to get out of here. But I never, ever leave church while the priest is still on the altar. So I'm waiting. The bishop is walking down the aisle. I have my eyes on him the whole time because I'm in a hurry. Come on, bishop, walk a little faster. And my kids are on the aisle, and I prayed my heart out for both of them during this mass. All of a sudden, the bishop, I watched him the whole time. He does not touch anybody on the way out. All of a sudden, this bishop stops, looks at my kids, and reaches out his hand and put the sign of the cross. He blessed both my kids on their forehead. Oh, my gosh. I got outside with my husband. I was shaking. I was crying. I couldn't even believe it. I mean, then a complete calm came over me. I didn't worry about my son in surgery and my son's first football game. Everything was fabulous. And, you know, I would just wonder what your lovely guest would think of that.
There you go, Ann. What?
What do I think about that? Well, I think that that's that beautiful interconnection that the priest picked up on what was going on with you. And my guess would be that that priest then was saying prayers and that, you know, he was making that connection for you and that you felt all that. And to me, that's a huge blessing.
What's the first thing you try to teach people in your workshops about personal oracles?
The very first thing that I try to teach people is to trust your gut. Trust that voice that says something to you and listen to it and don't second guess it.
That's the first thing?
That's the very first thing.
Do most people second guess it?
I think that what happens is we've got this little monkey mind chatter that, you know, when we get some sort of a wonderful intuition, the mind goes, oh, come on, that's silly, that's too far-fetched. Whatever the mind does to try to pull us off and get us back out of that pure thought thing. So, yeah, that would, well, I'm spontaneous. Maybe I might say something else. I might say open your heart and see yourself as a successful receiver of personal oracles. I think it's important to set that intention. So I'll back up and say, maybe I would set my intention first and say, okay, I'm going to go into this and I'm going to see myself as a successful interpreter, receiver of personal oracles. And then trusting your intuition and your gut, right up there, one and two.
Personal oracles, can they also be called intuition?
Intuition is the voice of personal oracles. The personal oracle, the way I define a personal oracle, is it's that response from the universe. That is engaged by a need, then it's the delivery system that responds to that need, and then the message is more the personal oracle. So your intuition will flag those for you. Like the intuition would say, hey, look over here, or oh, look up there at that cloud. Or what do you feel right here? Wait a minute, I'm starting to feel the familiar energy of my father. You know, that's what the part the intuition plays.
Toronto, Canada, we go. Hello, Tobin, take it away.
Hi, George. My dad and I really like you, and we really like your show.
Well, thank you, and thank your dad for me, Tobin.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Go ahead. Can you hear us?
I can't hear you, but I'll just...
Okay, I'm sorry. Try to get a better connection if you can. But thank you. Thanks to you and your dad for listening. Let's go to Sherry in Modesto, California. Hi, Sherry.
Oh, hi, George. Hi, Ann. Good to talk to both of you.
Good.
And, I just wanted to tell you an interesting story. Before my husband and I got married, that I'm married to now, we have got a really wonderful marriage, but I was going with this goofy guy that I was thinking about breaking up with. And anyway... my friend, I don't know if I should say the last name. I'll just
say my friend.
Jim.
Just,
but anyway, my friend Jim that watches over me from upstairs, I'll just say, he told me, and I heard the voice. I knew it was him in my head, the way he talked. And he said, don't ride in that truck with that guy anymore because he's going to wreck that truck. And the very side of the truck that you sit on is going to get totaled within a week. Well, so I listened and didn't ride the truck. And a week later, that's exactly what happened.
Good for you.
There it is. It's everywhere. I bet everybody has had these similar experiences.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes. And the more we acknowledge them, the more we're going to have. You know, and then the better your life gets because you're working in sync with an energy that's supporting you.
Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, it's just, it's amazing how many people this has happened to. What percent of the people do you think, and now it's all speculation, react to this or don't react to it? What do you think?
Ooh, what percent? Oh, that's a hard one. I think, you know, that don't react to it, that you mean that don't respond when they get a message like
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That'd be I would just have to really guess. I'd say maybe 50% don't. I think what factors
That's high.
In. I'm sorry?
That's pretty high.
I think what factors in there is fear.
All right, stay with us, and we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We've got a split show for you tonight, so next hour we're going to talk with Lynn McTaggart about the power of intention, plus the experiment we did over the city area of Washington, D.C. to reduce crime. How did it go? We'll check in with Lynn and find out. And we'll come back in a moment as we talk more about oracles and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And will we have collective oracles in that if something major is going to happen worldwide, do a lot of people pick up the same thing?
Wow, that's a really interesting question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. I would think that we definitely would. You know, I think that, you know, because of these interconnections, they will be signaling more than one person.
I think so, too.
You're talking about, like, major disasters.
Major.
Yeah, well, you know, there are technical equipment out now that can measure that. you know, when there's an energy out there. There's technical equipment. Greg Braden talks about that kind of thing.
Sure does.
You know, where they're actually monitoring that kind of thing.
It's amazing how it works, isn't it?
It is, truly.
All right, let's go to some final calls here. Let's go to Joanna in Lafayette, Louisiana. Hi, Joanna. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you? I love your show.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello?
Hi, I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. I think for a while there was a little blip. I had an incredible premonition about 9/11. That's what I was calling about. My husband and I, he was a pediatrician, we had gone to New York, and he wanted to go to the Twin Towers. This was in 1995, and I was aware of the 93 bombing.
Right.
But the thing is, he wanted to go up to the top and look at the city that morning. Well, normally, I would do that immediately. I would love to do that, and I don't have problems getting in elevators, and I don't have fear of heights. But in the cab on the way over there, I had a terrible feeling, and I said, honey, I don't want to go up to the top. I said, you go ahead. I'll just stay down the lobby. And he couldn't convince me. Wild horses couldn't get me to go up to the top. So I waited, he went up to the top in the elevator. I was in, like, the lobby of one of the Twin Towers. I don't know which one. And I remembered sitting there feeling awful. And I thought, why am I feeling like this? And I looked at people working there, and I felt so sorry for them. And I thought, what is wrong with me? I was like, what is wrong with me? And I have a master's degree in psychology, and I used that information. You know, I said, okay, you need to get to your gut feeling. So I asked myself, what am I feeling? And the answer was grief. And the second question I asked myself was, why am I feeling grief? And this is the truth, I promise you. The answer was because I feel like I'm sitting in a tomb.
Well, you sure were.
Yeah.
Sadly.
And I didn't know why. And I was feeling that way. I couldn't wait for him to come down. And when he came down, we left. But interestingly, that night, we went up to the top and ate in a restaurant, and I was fine. That night, I could go up and eat in the restaurant and enjoy it, and it was like it was gone. But, you know, those planes hit in the morning, and this was in the morning, and I would not go up. And I didn't, you know, when it later on when it happened, I remembered that. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I was feeling what was going to happen in the future.
Prior to the 9/11 episode, Joanna, did you feel maybe a week or two before that happened, did these feelings come back again or not?
No, there was nothing. I just remember the day of, well, that is interesting. There was one thing. I was supposed to go to an appointment on Monday morning. You know, it happened on Tuesday. And something told me, no, you need to stay home and you need to sell some of your stocks. And, you know, the stock market really plummeted after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I canceled the appointment and I stayed home and sold some mutual funds and things. I spent all day deciding which to sell and which to keep. And I kept all the defensive mutual funds, and the ones that were a little risky, I sold. And then the next day when it happened, the stock market fell, and some people lost quite a bit of money. It fell quite a bit.
Did.
And I was so glad that I had stayed home and sold. So I think that was kind of a something telling me. You know, I feel like it's the Holy Spirit telling us things, guiding us so that we're taken care of. I used to always pray about investments that I made and ask the Lord to help me make good investments. And I feel like the Holy Spirit is guiding me all the time. I mean, I get feelings all the time. You know,
something is guiding us. There's no doubt about that. But you know, is there a confusion, Ann, between oracles, which is what you've been talking about and what you write about, and or just that gut thing that we've got inside of us?
Well, I think it's all the same thing. And I also think that, you know, it's also what your caller was just talking about. It's the divine protection. Personal oracles encompass all of that. You know, the gut feelings are what signal that we're, you know, getting a personal oracle. I wanted to say one thing about what she was talking about. I have a chapter in the book called Crinkles in Time, and that's that time out of time where you get something, but it doesn't necessarily relate to a time period, which is what hers was. And so we have those times when things like that can happen where it's forward or backward, but not literal time.
We go next to Rory in Boston, Massachusetts. Rory, thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I'm a huge fan of the show. Thank you for having me. I actually just wanted to call in. I'm a student of history, and particularly of ancient Greek and Roman history. And, you know, when you study those time periods, you can't study them without coming across oracular utterances. They had huge effects on the way that policy in many cases was made within, you know, ancient Greek and particularly Roman history, with not only the Delphic Oracle, but also with the Sibyl and the Sibylline books. And I guess my question is today we don't really see that. I mean, I guess suppose you could maybe say that, you know, someone like Edgar Cayce is almost like a modern Sibyl. But I guess my question is, you know, do you think that the reason why those types of things aren't really as prevalent or held in much importance today is due to the rise of Christianity? Or do you think that really today in the modern mind, those things are viewed as almost like hocus pocus in a way? And really, that's my question. Thank you for having me, and have a great night.
Okay, what do you think of that, Ann?
Well, I think it's all of those things. I think that, you know, we are held back by people thinking things like that are superstition, people thinking, not seeing how that is connected to, can be connected to Christianity. You know, the burning of witches at the stake, you know, all those things were ways that we all went, wait a minute, if we're feeling this, maybe we'll be quiet about this. You know, this may not work in our favor, you know. So I believe that we're in a different time now, and I believe that, you know, back when we had the oracles, the person that you went to get a divine pronouncement, that was at that time period. I believe that it's been given to the individuals now, and with everything that we're opening up to and everything that we are becoming aware of, the way the universe is interconnected, we are given that power now. We don't need to go to somebody else. We can consult our own intuition. We can consult the stars. We can give ourselves that guidance and share it with others. That's the key. Share it, because the more we talk about it, the more we realize we're all having it. You know, you said 50% was high. Maybe not, because we're just not sharing it.
The oracles of the past, you know, like the oracles at Delphi, were they accurate, or were they hucksters? Who were they?
Well, they were priests, you know, and at that period of time, those were the people that were educated, you know. So they were high priests, and, you know, the things that I read about that I have studied, you know, they have a good record for being accurate. But I think, like anything else, I'm sure there were the ones that weren't, you know. I think that that's human to human condition.
Sharon's in Frenchburg, Kentucky, and now on the air with us. Hello, Sharon.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks, Sharon.
I'm a blessed woman. I have so many miracles in my life, but this was the most obvious thing, and still it goes on. Christmas Eve on 2011, I woke up and looked out the back of my window. Somebody told me to look out back, and I looked out back, and in the center of our outbuilding was on the door was a beautiful, brilliant blue light circle, and inside the circle was the symbol of the fish, you know, like the Christianity fish. And I thought nothing of it. I went back to bed. I thought, oh, that's nice. I went back to bed. The next night it was still there, and I tried to figure out where the light was coming from, and it looked like it was coming from the window, from a like the reflection from an outside light. But then our electricity went off. Weeks later we had a power outage. And the symbol had been there all the time. And with the power outage, I went and looked to see if it was there, and it was still there. It was there, only a lot lighter. And, you know, the moon was the only light that was any source of light in the area. And that's the following spring in 2012, we had a tornado that hit our area, and it was kind of like this bizarre thing because tornadoes weren't really known as noted in that part of the country there in eastern Kentucky. And our house was spared, and everything around us was just demolished, and our house was still standing. And then my husband had an incident with cancer, and he's been cured since then. So, you know, I feel like it was a message from God that everything was going to be okay, that our house would be spared, our lives would be taken care of.
See, there again, also, Ann, is that feeling of some divine power controlling the destiny of this stuff.
And or, you know, like we were talking about, the universe is designed to support us. So what I'm hearing through my frame of reference, our caller recognized this divine support, welcomed it in, and accepted it. So I think that, you know, that's... I think that's beautiful, and I think that what a blessing that she noticed it. And like we were talking earlier, sometimes things are happening that we don't notice. You know, I'm sure that there are people who have gotten beautiful symbols like that that for one reason or another did not see it.
Well, like you were saying, about 50% of the people don't see it. And I find that, sadly, too high, don't you?
Yes, and I think the more we talk about it, you know, I think that conversations like this where we all share these things that, you know, you can call them miracles, you can call them paranormal, you can call them magic, you can put whatever label on them, but they're happening all the time, and they're happening for our good, and the more we share them, the more we'll be able to, I think, drive that 50% up higher, because people will go, oh, that's not strange, you know, I heard about this and this and this and this, you know?
You had mentioned that also in your dream state, you can do some of this. Want to elaborate on that?
Well, I think dreams, you know, if you look through history, you'll find out that dreams have really been important for all kinds of inventions, and we all get all kinds of dreams. And there's one that I love that I have a section that is different scientists and things that they dreams that help them with their invention or whatever they were doing. And this one is, I like to say it's, have you heard the story about the cannibals? And it was the man who, I'm trying to think of his name, the man who invented the sewing machine.
His name had to be Singer. Eli Whitney?
Yeah, something like that. Elias someone. Anyway, he went to sleep, he had this dream, and he had been working on a sewing machine, and just couldn't quite get it together. And in his dream, he is being boiled in a big pot, and he has all these cannibals dancing around him. And he looks up, and the cannibals have got these spears with points on them, and the point has a little hole in it. And he goes, ah, that's what I need. I need that.
Yeah.
And so dreams work like that for us, you know, to solve problems that we have, to give us messages that we have a hard time receiving on a waking state.
By the way, it was Elias Howe.
There you go. Thank you for that. Thanks.
However, they also say Isaac Singer also came up with some of it. So,
oh, really?
So
oh, I'm glad to know that.
Yeah. You know what? I knew of it.
Well, thank you.
Singer sewing machine, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, anybody that's ever had a sewing machine probably has had a Singer.
Does anybody even have sewing machines anymore?
I know three people.
How old are they? I don't think young people sew.
I don't think so. Probably 40. No, I think you're right. I think it would have to be somebody who is interested in the fashion industry.
So many industries like that are going away. I mean,
yeah.
I remember in my earlier days as a boy, every family had a sewing machine. Every family. You know, if it was, my grandmother had one that was a foot pump thing. You had to pump it with your foot to make it spin.
Yeah.
I mean, though, that was really old, but everybody had a sewing machine, and a lot of people made clothes and stuff, but those days are gone.
I think you're right.
That's an open line night all by itself. How many people have sewing machines?
I think we should do that. Let's take a survey.
Let's go to Lisa in Gadsden, Alabama. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Ann. How are you?
Good.
I just want to say I've had several encounters, and I think you have to be open to faith and what you cannot see. And if you believe in a higher power and you open yourself up to that, you have more encounters to know that there's somebody up there that's looking out for you. First, I was in high school and in basketball, and I was late and driving down the country road that I lived in, came around the corner, around the bend, over the hill, and Mr. Dunn's cows were out, and there probably were 20 cows in the road, and I just closed my eyes, let go of the wheel. I was doing about 70, and when I opened my eyes, the cows were behind me.
Wow.
The second thing that stands out, and I've had many more than that, is I was really hurting from a personal relationship breakup, and I went out to get some money because I had a bill to pay. And there was a woman standing on the side of the road, and I'm one that picks people up, even though people say you're crazy for doing that. But I did, and she got in the car, and I had one cigarette left, and she said, "Can I have that cigarette?" And I said, "Yes." And she looked at me, and she said, "You know, you're never alone, because Jesus is always with you." And what just melted me on that is that was the case with me at the time. And then we kept going down the road, and it's a familiar place. I lived here, grew up here. And she said, "You can let me out here." And when I picked her up, she said, "Oh, I'm waiting for the bus. I just left from church." And this was on a Thursday night. The church was closed. It was 11 o'clock at night. And she was in a very nice red dress. And when she said, "Stop and let me out," it was an abandoned house. And when I let her out and started to drive off, I looked in the rearview mirror, and she was gone.
Jeez. Well, it's oracles. Ann, thanks for being on the program. Up next, Lynn McDagger joins us, The Power of Intention.